the headlines, the United States says its Afghan war strategy will not change following fresh revelations. Iran warns of a U.S. and Israeli plot to wage a new war in the Middle East.
نه تصمیم گرفتن تا سه ماه آینده علیه دو تا کشور منطقه عملیات انجام بدن.
And the new poll shows more Americans have become disappointed in President Obama.
Hello everyone, it's 2:30 a.m. here in Tehran and you're watching the news here on Press TV.
Thanks for joining us. Top U.S. military officer Admiral Michael Mullen says there will be no change in the Afghan war strategy despite the recently leaked American military documents. Well, Mr. Mullen says the Obama administration considered all the documents during its review of the Afghan war strategy last year. While the documents link the Afghan militancy to Pakistan, Mullen says they don't call the relationship between Washington and Islamabad into question, but he added that concerns still remain about the alleged links between Pakistan and Taliban.
To remind of
the Iranian president says the U.S. and Israel are planning to attack at least two countries in the Middle East within the next 3 months.
Well, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad says it's part of a plot to exert more pressure on Iran.
President Ahmadinejad said in an exclusive interview with Press TV that the United States and its ally Israel are planning to wage a new war in the Middle East.
Here I announce that they have decided to attack at least two countries in the region within the next 3 months.
Ahmadinejad says the plan is only aimed at stabilizing Israel in the region.
All these games are aimed at helping the Zionist regime survive.
The Iranian president says the West is pressuring Iran over its nuclear program with two main objectives.
Their first objective is that they want to prevent Iranians from progressing. They want us to fully depend on them. They lie when they say they are against nuclear weapons. That's why I asked them to bring the Israeli nukes on the spotlight. But they refuse to do so. Their second objective is that they are seeking to rescue Israel, which lacks legitimacy in the region.
Ahmadinejad lashed out at the latest round of sanctions against his country just after Tehran, in a confidence-building measure, agreed to a fuel swap declaration brokered by Turkey and Brazil. He rejected claims that the sanctions have been effective in persuading the Islamic Republic to come to the negotiating table.
The logic that they can persuade us to negotiate through sanctions is just a failure. We have been for talks all the time. We have never stopped negotiating. If any talks were suspended, it was on their part, not ours.
The Iranian president said, however, that Tehran has a number of conditions for the upcoming round of talks over its nuclear program. Among the conditions that Ahmadinejad outlined are: 1. Other countries should be included in the talks in addition to the 5 permanent members of the UN Security Council plus Germany. 2. They should voice their stance about the Israeli nukes. We want them to say whether they accept or oppose Tel Aviv's nuclear arsenal. And 3. They should clarify what they are seeking through negotiations, friendship and cooperation, or hostility. Ahmadinejad said Iran is always open to any kind of negotiations for deepening cooperations, and the talks should never be used as a tool for further dominance.
Well, we asked political analyst Kaveh Afrasiabi in Boston what the U.S. and Israel would hope to gain from a possible new war in the Middle East.
I think the main reason is that the Middle East peace process has reached a definite deadlock. There's absolutely no movement whatsoever on the Palestinian issue, and traditionally Israel has used other threats or make-believe threats as a scapegoat in order to deflect attention from its responsibility for bringing the Israel-Palestinian issue to the present deadlock. There's no pressure whatsoever pressure on Israel from Washington and other Western capitals for Israel to relent on its oppressive policies on the Palestinians, and therefore it makes sense from Israel's vantage point to, you know, wreak another havoc in the Middle East region in order to, as I said, deflect attention from itself and its lack of responsibility on the peace process.
The U.S. military says it cannot say what has happened to the billions of dollars it received to help reconstruct Iraq. The Special Inspector General for Iraq Reconstruction says the U.S. Department of Defense cannot account for $8.7 billion out of just over $9 billion. The inspector blames poor record-keeping and lax oversight for the loss. Much of the money came from the sale of Iraqi oil and gas. The funds in question were administered by the U.S. Department of Defense between 2004 and 2007 and were earmarked for reconstruction projects. The report also said the U.S. military continues to hold over $34 million of the fund, even though it was required to return it to the Iraqi government back in 2007. Well, to tell us more on that, I'm going to bring in Mr. Edward Peck. He is a former U.S. ambassador to Iraq, joining us on the phone from Washington. Mr. Peck, it's good to have you with us. The U.S. says it cannot account for billions of taxpayer dollars in Iraq war funds. What does that tell you?
Well, it reminds us again, I guess all of us, that if you rush in to throw money at projects, you're going to have a certain amount of slippage. Now, I will agree that that certain amount of slippage looks like an awful lot of slippage from here. I think it's worthwhile remembering that the United States is not happy about this. It considers that perhaps a number of people were complicit in the effort to turn the money around, and there were a number of military officers were prosecuted for some of the problems that were noted a while ago by the Inspector General when they first noticed this particular difficulty was occurring.
Mr. Peck, what about the Afghan war? Since relatively the same team organized the war affairs over there, what would you say on that?
Well, it's always difficult. You know, we have seen people from every nation and every organization, some of them will try to take advantage of the fact that there's a lot of money moving through an area quickly, and the idea, the objective is to get it spent. And sometimes it isn't spent accurately. And wartime is a perfect example of why this happens and how it happens, because there is so much money and so much attention is being paid to getting it out there so it can do some good, that quite often it doesn't. It's a horrible fact of life, and I think that everybody in Washington is appropriately, what's the word I need to use, embarrassed about this, because it really is a shameful series of things that have happened. And I would mention, by the way, that it isn't U.S. taxpayers' money in this particular case. It's Iraqi government money generated from the sale of Iraqi oil, which the United States was supposed to spend for development projects inside Iraq, except no one knows exactly where the money went.
Okay, many thanks, Mr. Edward Peck, former U.S. ambassador to Iraq, on the phone from Washington. Let's move on to another story. A new opinion poll shows the U.S. public is increasingly dissatisfied with the president's handling of the current issues facing the country.
Well, amid public outcry, a majority of voters are now leaning towards Republican candidates in the November midterm elections. According to a recent survey conducted by Reuters Ipsos, Obama's handling of the economy is deteriorating at a rapid pace that is faster than any other issue on hand. The president's approval rating has dropped by nearly 20% since the beginning of last year. He's also losing support in handling of the two wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, down 14% from February 2009. Obama's poor performance is pushing voters across the aisle. Almost half of the registered voters say they are inclined to vote for Republicans in the upcoming congressional elections. To discuss this more, we're joined from Washington on the phone by Bill Jones. He's with the Executive Intelligence Review. Welcome to the program, sir. It seems that President Obama's promise of change has instead changed the tide against him.
Well, it's a question of whether he has actually really changed anything or whether the change was in the opposite direction that the population believed it was going. Whatever the case may be, he was at his height when he took the oath of office, and he's been going down ever since, and it's getting at a never greater rate. It's very difficult to see how or if he could make any kind of a comeback on this. I think he's in the doldrums now, and I don't think he's going to get much higher than that during whatever time he has left in his presidency.
And Eden, what has been his weakest point in the past couple of years?
Well, there are two issues. One was policy issues. The American people were anxious. They talked about change. They were anxious, especially for a change in the economic horizon. Obama didn't orient towards that so much as to what Wall Street needed to keep afloat, believing, I believe mistakenly, that was the basis for any kind of development in the economy. Nobody really felt that except the Wall Street fat cats, most of whom didn't vote for Obama, although they might have put some money in his campaign to keep Hillary out. But on Main Street, nobody felt anything. Actually, it's gone from bad to worse. And they've seen the president focusing on his issues, health care, which was not the number one issue for most people, and this climate change, which definitely is not the major issue for people. So people believe that he is totally alienated from what the general population feels and thinks, and that therefore they want anybody but Obama, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat, and there may even be a Democratic challenger if things look really bad for him come 2012.
All right, we'll leave it there. And thanks to Bill Jones with the Executive Intelligence Review from Washington.
It's 2:42 a.m. in Tehran, and here is a reminder of this hour's top stories. The United States says its Afghan war strategy will not change following fresh revelations. Iran warns of a U.S. and Israeli plot to wage a new war in the Middle East.
علیه دو تا کشور منطقه عملیات انجام بده.
And a new poll shows more Americans have become disappointed in President Obama.
Still to come here on Press TV, the fate of BP CEO. Stay tuned. Program. Greenpeace UK activists have hijacked some 50 petrol stations belonging to BP in London. The move was done as a warning that the company needs more than a change in leadership to rise out of its ongoing disaster. Press TV's Fareen Alam reports.
BP is the UK's biggest corporation and the fourth largest company in the world, but it's taken a severe battering to its reputation recently. This week, the company announced losses of £11 billion, with the cost of the Gulf of Mexico oil leak clocking in at £35 billion. Its British chief executive, Tony Hayward, has shouldered the bulk of the blame and is now going to be replaced by an American, a first for this British giant. America is BP's largest market in the world, and the Gulf oil spill has been disastrous for its reputation. So the company say, even though Tony Hayward has been nothing but an asset so far, the company needs a new face and a new beginning now. Bob Dudley will take over from 1st October after Hayward claimed he was vilified in the US as the British face of British petroleum in the aftermath of the worst environmental disaster in US history. But campaign groups like Greenpeace say BP needs more than what they call a cosmetic change in leadership. The group took over dozens of BP petrol stations in London on Tuesday to make the point.
In times of crisis, there's always an opportunity to reinvent yourself, to become a different kind of company. And the question is, are they going to use this crisis to reinvent themselves as a new kind of company? Or are we, all we're going to see really is the same company emerge that we had under Tony, but we just happen to have a new name on the headed paper?
The campaigners say they have stopped the fuel supply by flipping safety switches on some 50 forecourts. A significant loss in earnings is sure to ensue.
We want to see them as a clean renewable energy company. We want to see them as a successful company. But if they keep on going backwards into dirty sources of fuel like tar sands, if they keep going to the Arctic and to deep water oil fields, all we're going to see in future is more disasters for the natural environment. We're going to see a massive increase in greenhouse gas emissions, which is causing climate change. And we're also going to see a much higher risk for investors.
Hayward leaves with a £1 million payoff and a £10 million pension pot, and is likely to become a non-executive director of the firm's Russian joint venture, TNK-BP. Farina Alam, Press TV, London.
Well, U.S. lawmakers and people living around the Gulf of Mexico have slammed President Barack Obama's moratorium on deepwater drilling in the body of the water.
They insist the ban is suffocating small businesses and destroying the livelihoods of local residents. Democratic Senator Mary Landrieu says Obama's decision was made in an uninformed manner. She says the ban must be reserved as it increases risks to job security. A study by Louisiana State University is estimated that a moratorium will cost more than 8,000 jobs. Obama imposed the six-month ban following an accident on BP's Deepwater Horizon oil rig in April. Local residents have called on Obama to admit that the moratorium is a mistake.
The Greek Prime Minister's in Bulgaria to salvage the stalled Burgas Alexandru Poli natural gas pipeline project. Press TV's Yalda Sadikova reports.
The Greek Prime Minister Georgios Papandreou did not get a firm yes. He visited neighboring Bulgaria on Tuesday, July 27, to discuss, among other things, the stalled Burgas Alexandroupoli project, a proposed Russian pipeline for carrying oil from Bulgaria's Black Sea port of Burgas to the Greek Alexandroupoli port on the Aegean Sea.
We understand the Bulgarian government concerns. They are priority for us too.
I thank my colleague Papandreou for understanding that we are worried about the environment of the Burgas region and that the Burgas Alexandroupoli project is not being frozen because we have been stubborn or because we are failing to fulfill our contractual obligations.
The residents of the Burgas area oppose the project. Experts say the technology that would be used for transferring oil from tankers to the ground at the Gulf of Burgas poses a danger.
This technology is very risky from the point of releasing of oil in the sea. The Gulf itself is with a very endemic type of streams inside, so even a small release of oil would affect the ecosystems there. And the having in mind that every day we would have between one and two big tankers with oil, the risk to happen a big accident is growing.
Construction of Burgas Alexandroupoli was supposed to start in October 2009, but Bulgaria's environmental concerns have delayed it. The environmental impact assessment hasn't started yet.
It costs money to select experts and order the International Environmental Impact Assessment. The three countries participating in the project have to pay.
The troubled Greek economy needs Burgas Alexandroupoli. It would bring investment and revenue from transit fees. So what if Bulgaria gives up the pipeline?
I don't think our relationships should be defined by Burgas Alexandroupolis alone, by whether the environmental impact assessment is positive or negative.
Mr. Papandreou arrived in Bulgaria at a crucial moment for his country. An international inspection is now underway in Greece. It's going to assess the effectiveness of the country's austerity measures before a second installment of international bailout funds can be released to save Athens from defaulting. Yildiz Sarakova, Press TV, Sofia.
Thanks for watching Press TV. Just enough time for a reminder of Press TV's website. All the W's.presstv.ir is the address of that. This is how it